Hello, lovely people, and welcome to the final episode in this season of Handcut Radio. We're ending season three on a high with a chat with a British designer that I very much admire. Oliver Spencer is a one-of-a-kind, a self-made grafter who's built up two brands over the course of more than two decades working in menswear. As you'll hear, his career kick-started in 1993 when he started selling second-hand menswear at Portobello Market. Skip forward 26 years and his British formal wear brand Favourbrook is headquartered in a palatial shop on Pall Mall, and Oliver Spencer has six shops in London as well as a fleet of international stockists. Ollie's instinct for clothing and for what men want to wear is second to none, and over the past 2 years he's been on an absolute sustainability campaign. We talk about the early years of his career, deep dive into his sustainability movement, and explore some of the challenges faced by shopkeepers in the high street today. We absolutely loved chatting to him and hope you'll enjoy this final conversation of the season.
Morning, Alex.
How are you? You all right, Mr. Spencer? You're good?
Yeah. In my, back in the hood after a bit of time away.
It's nice. Good. We've been having a bit of a chat before the mics turned on. We're in your Lamb's Conduit Street office. Your very glamorous team have been whisking samples in and out. You've been doing your thing this morning. It's good.
And it's Lamb's Conduit Street is totally my favourite street in London. And, it's kind of what a high street should be.
Yeah.
A modern day high street should be. And hopefully it will be what the high street of the future looks like. Lots of lovely independents doing
interesting things.
It's not mass production, but it is production.
Mm.
And it's made by factories that are care about what they're making. Made with love is what I like to say.
That's what you say.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Well, where shall we start? How are we going to unpick this? I wondered whether, let's whistle back through your kind of career progression, because I think not many people probably realise that Favourbrook, your formal wear brand, came before Oliver Spencer.
Way before. In fact, I started that when I was... I just left art school and I was on Portobello Road running around selling anything I could get my hands on, because at the time it was like I was young, I was kind of just out of art school and
wanted to get
money
on.
Was too tight to mention.
Mm.
I wanted to get on the ladder, and Portobello Road was just ace back then. It was full of characters, full of everything going on, kind of in a nice way, Rolex faces with Timex movements.
Yeah,
that's the way I'd always described it.
I
just loved all of that side of things. It was just great.
It was buzzing.
Yeah, buzzing.
Totally. Rolex faces and Timex movements. I love that.
Yeah, well, there's something in that as well. It's kind of a great period of time, early 90s. Music was kind of brilliant at that period of time, and everyone was out and about. Clubs were a big thing, starting to go raving.
Yeah,
although early days, just the scene. There were clubs like Quiet Storm, Green Onions. There was still the Wag.
Yeah.
Chris Sullivan, if you're listening, you're a legend. it was brilliant. It was brilliant from that. In fact, Chris just released a new book. Have you seen that book?
I haven't, no.
Yeah. He's just released a new book with Chrysos, I think. So that's going to be well worth a read. About that period of time, anyway. So that was just a good period of time, and I was mucking around selling secondhand clothing, really.
Mm-hmm. And you got your hands on some silks, didn't you?
Yeah. I got my hands on some damaged silks, Ecclesiastical, damaged cloth and started mucking around with waistcoat patterns and started cutting those out of there and started doing. So there was like, at the time, there were a few other people doing some really interesting stuff. So Scott Carolla was a big influence on me in the early days. He's a furniture designer in Milan now. He did amazing stuff. And Elton John was wearing a lot of Scott at the time. And it was a good... the late great Joe Casely Haysford was certainly influencing everybody. But they were all part of that. Christopher Nemeth, all kind of part of that team at the time. And it was great.
Now, how did you get from cutting your, you know, squeezing waistcoats out of damaged cloth to launching the Faverbrook brand, which today is hugely respected?
So that was an interesting one. We... a friend of mine was a real estate dealer in the West End, and 1993, you couldn't give shops away. Nobody wanted them.
Why was that? Was digital kicking in?
No, digital, we hadn't done that first dot-com bubble.
No,
that was horrible. No, there were plenty of shops available, and... we'd had recession after recession in the sort of late 80s.
Yeah, of course.
And we hadn't hit the new Labour vibes yet. And
it was all a bit bleak.
Yeah, it was all a bit bleak. And so Ben came up to me and said, "Do you want the shop? I've got this wonderful shop. It's quite small, but it's double fronted in Piccadilly Arcade. You can have it for a year free." And I was like, "Hell yeah." I didn't really give a... I was just out there just going for it, and I didn't really realize what was going on. And of course, it never worked. It didn't work for the first 3 years anyway. And I was actually probably going to be, I was pretty close to being foreclosed on by the bank.
Right.
And I got lucky one day because I'd bought these cufflinks in Portobello Road for 600 quid. Which is a big shout back then, by the way. But they were 14 carat, and they were wine, women, and song.
Nice.
Right? Enameled, beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And I gave them to the girl in the shop, and I just said, "Look, you know, I bought these for 600, so sell them for 800. Just take a turn quickly and stick them in the window." She actually stuck an extra zero on the end, and I was like wistfully away doing something somewhere, and she said, "Well, the Spanish hotel owner's just come in and he paid 8 grand for the cufflinks."
I was like ka-ching.
I was like result, because that was like 35% of my overdraft at the time just
wicked.
Paid off in one hit, and literally saved my bacon, this guy. And I have seen him afterwards, although he keeps on. He also bought 10 waistcoats as well.
Nice.
So he was like completely into the whole thing. So that was great. And then we had 4 weddings and a funeral, which bounced our way, which was brilliant.
Because they're wearing favourite waistcoats.
Yeah, boom, went on and on and on. After that, we started to... we started to become popular.
Yeah, and you still are. Now you've got the wonderful shop on Pall Mall.
Yeah, Pall Mall's been moved off German Street, very sadly, but rents got beyond me. And mucked around in Savile Row for a bit looking for something, but didn't quite find our place. I've never felt like I quite belong on Savile Row. I kind of feel like I belong somewhere between Savile Row and German Street. And I've always kind of felt that. And then one day I was away and somebody gave me a call and said, "Look, there's this magnificent shop next to Farlow's." And I don't know if you know about Farlow's, but if you're a fisherman, Farlow's is Mecca. And it's been there for a long time. And every self-respecting fisherman goes to Farlow's. And I just thought to myself, gosh, if they'd been able to survive at the bottom end of Lower Regent Street, I might be able to survive there too. And the store is absolutely amazing. Double fronted Lutyens building, incredible. 2,800 square feet. I was just like, this has got to be it.
Yeah.
I love it.
And it is
absolutely
awesome.
Absolutely love it.
It's a stunning
and,
shop.
I really feel like, although we were at 55 Germ Street for years, which is also a stunning shop, I just kind of feel as though this is on another level, and our service has gone up another level, and our product's gone up because of our shop, dare I say it, because of our surroundings. I feel like we've got a shop in a museum.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is an amazing thing. So I think that in this new age of e-commerce and retail, it is much more important now to be a shopkeeper.
Interesting.
And to deliver service that is on another level, which I feel stores like Liberty's have always done.
Mm-hmm.
A very good store for us. I feel like Mr. Porter does it on the airwaves really well. And then recently we've launched at Nordstrom in America,
yeah,
which has been another level of service.
And this is now, we're now talking about Oliver Spencer.
I'm talking about Oliver Spencer. So for anyone listening, I do both. So it just, they have a lot of crossover. Although different brands, they do have a lot of crossover. Although Favorite Brooks sold on Mr. Porter.
Yeah.
And on The Rake.
Oh, yes.
On The Rake. We've just started working with The Rake.
Cool.
Which is great. Nice to be part of that setup as well. So I just kind of feel that in Paramount we were able to deliver service on another level, and this is what's important right now.
Why?
Because when you're, if you're going to take the time to walk out of your office or out of your house, and you're going to go shopping, and you're doing us the favor of coming to see us, and I really view it like that, when you arrive, you want to be properly looked after in the nicest possible way. If they need a restaurant table around the corner, we'll get it for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's that type of level.
And that is in response to digital, is it? It's the to get people store.
No, I don't even think about digital that much when it comes to Favorite Brook. I just think that I just think we've got great products. It's very tactile, very feel. You've got to come in and
It's something about the velvet.
You've got to
it?
Come in and feel the cloth. You've got to come in and try it on and feel what it's like to wear. Mm. I mean, I don't like the word luxury at all. But if you're going to use it in its proper sense, velvet is kind of beyond luxury.
Mm, mm.
It's got a it's almost got its own atmosphere around it. It is just an amazing thing, and I feel the same about corduroy as well.
Yeah.
But then it could be down to all of the textures, wool, and the recycled cashmere that we're using at the moment.
Well, there's lots to unpick here. So why don't we? I want to come back to Oliver Spencer because we've touched on Favorite Brook.
Yeah, yeah.
Oliver Spencer followed in 2002.
Yeah.
How did that come about to go from, you know, really really high end formal wear?
Well, because at the time we were doing I had lots of friends shopping in the store as well, and they were all like, it's fair enough you doing all these velvet and corduroys and da-da-da-da-da, but what are we actually supposed to wear during the day? And, you know, if you're, I don't know, one of the big ad guys at the time or, I mean, we've got such an interesting customer list, and by the way, it's a 19-year-old. In fact, my son, who's at school at the moment, all of his kids are into Favorite Brook. All of his mates are into Favorite Brook.
Interesting.
And not Oliver Spencer. They want all the old school stuff. They're really into it. I mean, it totally amazes me. They're all listening to Brian Ferry as well.
Yeah.
Which I just love, you know. So it's kind of a bit of a glam rock thing going on. 15-year-old kids at the moment. So they're quite... Yeah, so there's that, and then there's an 85-year-old customer, you know, who's
who is old, a proper establishment,
proper old school, and who wants, you know, who wants maybe wants a new velvet jacket because there's too many cigarette burns on it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, although there can never be enough for me. So it's like, you know, it is like that. And I think that, yeah, so what happened was I was doing more and more corduroy suits and I started doing moleskin suits. And my business partner, Marina, said to me, you know, we should do something a little different with that stuff that you're doing now because it's not really, it's becoming more and more and it's not totally fitting into what we're doing. So I have to be honest, for 2002, 2003, yeah, the first 3 years were a complete waste of time for us. We were just selling to our mates and we were hardly doing any business and it was really tough. And then we started to become more established and then we, as soon as we opened the shop.
Here?
Yeah, here, 2007, we opened the shop.
Mm.
Boom.
You're in.
Yeah, I mean, it just changed everything.
Awesome.
And we've kept our, you know, we've kept our whole ethos. We're a very organic business.
Well, okay, so if I had to pin you down to kind of one thing, one statement, what does Oliver Spencer stand for today as a brand?
We're a lifestyle brand.
Okay.
Totally. That's what we do. We're a lifestyle brand that it brings in a bit of fashion,
mm-hmm.
right? We are texture, we're interest, detail.
Well, I don't know, we've talked about this before. I always see your client as that really hip 20 to 30 something. He's in a business casual or a creative environment.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's in an agency in the East End, you know, it does sort of
so there are, that's bang on, there's plenty of those, but it's also stretching into a young entrepreneur. It's also hitting a 60-year-old. I mean, I've got this brilliant thing going on at the moment. I've got Jonah Hugh King, who's on BBC One at the moment doing World War II series.
Cool.
He's the lead in that. It's a young new actor, amazing, massively in our staff. And then we've got, and then last week, Gandalf himself.
Very good.
Was out and about in one of our suits. And had bought a whole load of stuff from us. I mean, when you've got a cross-section of the young actors and the older actors wearing your stuff,
it's quite exciting.
Totally. So I love the fact that we can dress all of those people. And
so for you, it's not about, you don't pigeonhole yourself into a demographic. It's about servicing guys. No,
I'm really not interested in that. They all share the same thing. They all share a love for being, you know, we're slightly artisan,
mm-hmm.
slightly, you know, everything's made with love. It's not perfect. It's not made by computers. It's made in wonderful factories. Mm. As a business, we're very sustainably driven. And I think this is really important for us. Organic, cottons, ecological wools, the packaging we take very seriously.
Well, let's get into this because...
But that goes back to your original question. That's the lifestyle call. When I talk about lifestyle, I'm not only talking about clothing, I'm talking about everything we're about. And as a brand... whether at Favourbrook or Oliver Spencer. So there's all of those things that are just so important.
Kind folk, just one final reminder for you that this season is sponsored by Thomas Mason, the esteemed shirting mill founded in 1796, now cared for by the Albini Group. Hopefully you'll have listened to the two bonus episodes we put together, which explore the brand's history and explain my own affection for Thomas Mason shirting fabrics. But if you haven't, please do check them out. The brand's approach to what it does is absolutely fascinating. You can also win, yes, win, 3 complimentary bespoke shirts cut in Thomas Mason cloth, thanks to Turnbull and Asser, who've kindly partnered with us to bring you a competition. To win 3 bespoke shirts cut in Thomas Mason cloth at either Turnbull's New York or London stores, visit handcutradio.com/Thomas Mason and sign up with your email address. There are 2 sets of 3 shirts available, and the 2 winners will be chosen at random and notified next week. Don't miss out. The address to visit is handcutradio.com/Thomas Mason. Good luck. But when did you, it's roughly 2 years ago, you kind of planted a flag in the sand and said, I want my business to be as sustainable as possible in a meaningful way.
Well, we've actually been like this for years.
Right.
It's just that I got this, I employed someone in my business who's a guy, Blue, his name is. He's an amazing jewellery designer. We have his jewellery in the shop. And Blue came to me one morning and said, look, Ollie, you know, I've got a degree in sustainability and the environment and all of this, and I think you're doing bucket loads and we just need to do a few things. We need to spend 6 months and then you should start talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we just, you know, literally, I wanted to be very sure that I could answer people like you without any BS.
Yeah.
So I employed someone, you know, young, fresh out of college, doing their thing, and I think that really made me wake up to what we'd been doing. And at the same time, he was very kind of forthright and gave me a bit of a ticking off about certain things, which I really kind of enjoyed. I mean, look, the whole process exists to learn from. I'm still learning. When I stop learning, I'm going to sell the business.
Yeah.
I know that for sure.
Yeah.
When I can't get my head around what the hell's going on, I'm going to call it a day.
Yeah.
Or hand it over to the youth.
The youth
and let them get on with running it, because they'll do a better job than me. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a, you know, from that point of view, I think that the clothing business, our sector is in a massive state of change at the moment.
Yeah.
I've never seen such a state of change ever in 20-odd years in the business.
And that's because consumers want more now? Consumers expect meaningful, sustainable...
The high street is being torn apart.
Right.
And the high street has taken the consumer for a ride and if you like, taking the mickey out of them.
Mm-hmm.
They've been forced to do that because of a couple of reasons. The e-com revolution has created an unfair taxed playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And business rates have gone through the roof and rent's gone through the roof. So what have they done? They've gone to Vietnam.
Well, they've gone on the race
and,
to the bottom.
And said, well, how cheaply can we produce a white T-shirt and put it on a marble table and we'll take a massive margin on it.
Mm.
And that's how we're going to, deal with this. But, you know, what that's led to us being is totally... we're the second largest polluter in the world now, our industry. It's disgusting.
It is disgusting.
It's absolutely disgusting. I just think that we have to change, and that's really kind of important. People should go out and they should invest.
Right. Unpick for me some of the things you've done to move to or some of the things that historically have been a part of business.
So one of the most important things I did was something I could do in about an hour, having sat down with Blue. He presented a shirt to me and he said, I'll tell you what, next season, please take all of the inside packaging out of your shirts.
Mm.
And that's exactly what we did. Because... Okay, so right, I mean, we actually, if you add up how many shirts we produce and all of that packaging would have filled cubically an entire double-decker bus.
Wow. So in a season.
In a season. And it's a, I mean, that's an amazing amount of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty incredible. So secondly, the thing is with e-com, right, is that you order an Oliver Spencer shirt, matches, Mr. Porter, whatever, gets delivered beautifully.
Yeah.
Although I like the fact that on both sites now, you can opt out of the full packaging BS.
Yeah.
Right? You can just have the bare essential delivery. Right? So you would get the shirt delivered. and you would decide whether you liked it. If you liked it, you'd pull it out and you'd keep it, and that would be great. If you didn't, and it was the wrong size, you would send it back. And then it would have to come back and be repackaged again before it was sent out to the next customer.
Yeah.
This could happen 3 or 4 times on an item. So to me, this is a really big problem. Mm. Really big problem.
I can't get my head around the amount of stuff that an e-com order comes with.
Yes.
You know, it's not just one cardboard box. There's a presentation box inside that, and it's filled with tissue paper.
Yeah.
And then your shirt's got 6 bits of plastic in it, and it's not recyclable plastic. It's one-use plastic.
No, so everything has got to change.
Yeah.
It's got to change. We have got to change the way that we deliver. So at the moment, we're developing a paper bag that we will deliver to you in. You will accept your goods. And if you like it, you will keep it. You will send the paper bag back to us then, and we will then reuse it. We estimate at the moment we can reuse that bag 6 times to deliver to customers.
Brilliant.
So these are all part and parcel of the steps that we're taking as a business. Those are relatively easy to talk about, but quite difficult to do, especially the last one.
And that it's important to use organic cotton because you're not covering the world in pesticides in doing that.
Absolutely. Organic cotton. Linen is the best product you can possibly use. We use tons of linen in the summer. And in fact, we're just been with Matches actually this morning doing spring, autumn, winter pre, which gets delivered in May.
Right.
Which is really deep linen territory.
Yeah.
It's when we're all,
all in our short sleeve shirts. Yeah,
hopefully on the Cornish Riviera, rocking a bit of linen.
And I wanted to flag as well, you're using a lot of recycled materials, particularly in Faverbrook you've started.
Yeah. So the recycled cashmere has been a massive thing. Oh, by the way, all the linens are in Faverbrook too. So that's what I mean about Faverbrook at the end of the day, is that it's always used, all these organic linens. And, you know, let's just talk about linen again, actually. Because the crop is interesting, because the bud itself obviously gets spun and used, but the plant itself gets used for cattle feed.
Right. So it all goes back into the mix.
All of it.
Yeah.
The whole lot. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Recycled cashmere comes from a mixture of the shop floor, offcuts, and people throwing away their jumpers.
Yeah.
It gets broken down, a lot of people, yeah, a lot of people don't like moths. But being in the clothing trade, I quite like a moth that causes carnage in a wardrobe.
I fucking hate moths.
Yeah.
Deep. This is a swearing-friendly podcast.
As a clothing manufacturer, I love a moth. Yeah,
Fair enough. Get
them into the wardrobe.
Give it a clean out.
Right, recycle that cashmere jacket, right? Take it round to the recycle bank, get it popped up, get it cut up, and get it rewoven, and then we'll make something new out of it. In the meantime, come back, put a bit more money into a new product.
And that is what happens, is that the recycled material gets broken down back to fibre level,
Yeah. Respun
and rewoven.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. I'm with you on the moss, by the way. I totally agree. But it's an interesting concept. I mean, for us, it's a concept because, as people put it to me, in fact, I've got someone coming down here today that says he bought a jacket from me in 1998.
Cool.
But it's got no label in it, squares its mind and wants to reproduce it again. Mm. And I'm like, okay, I'll have a look. You know, it's an old Velvet Nera jacket, not a favourite of Velvet Nera. It's highly possible he's lost a label along the way.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. Yes, I think that at the end of the day, the consumer needs to buy less, but spend more on what they're buying.
Mm.
Investment pieces. That's the important way forward right now.
And really actually deep diving on, are you going to a brand that's thought about how they can deliver this in a meaningful way?
100%.
Do you find that a lot of brands in our space are guilty of kind of playing the sustainability card and not backing it up?
I'm not going to say yes or no, because fine. At the end of the day, other brands, I like to mind my own business.
Fine.
The thing I'm completely obsessed about is the high street and how bad it's got.
Mm.
But I'm not going and to you tell
mean,
you.
You mean bad in terms of manufacturing quality and the impact it's having on the
yes,
planet?
Yes, yes. Fine. I think it's absolutely appalling. I have very much enjoyed working with Sainsbury's and TU over the last 2 years. Trying to fix and trying to help them look at clothing in a different way. Mm. And we produced this a sustainably driven range of clothing, and it's absolutely flown out of the stores. It's been amazing.
So that's so important, that, isn't it? Because you're then showing huge high street players that there is a way to make this work.
There's totally a way to make it work. They become so obsessed in their numbers game.
Yeah.
And actually, occasionally, they need someone like me to come in who just doesn't care about their numbers game. You just need better product.
Yeah.
And you need to be building it in a better way. And actually, by doing that, kind of force them to get out to Bangladesh and look at other manufacturers that are perhaps manufacturing in a much better way. And actually, I've seen video footage. I've never been, but I've seen video footage of a state-of-the-art factory in Bangladesh that makes everything else look rubbish.
Yeah.
It is so good. It's one extreme to the other over there. But this guy, it's an ex-American Bangladeshi who's gone back home, built this new factory. Whoa.
Wicked.
Incredible.
Yeah, doing something different.
I mean, doing something different. And hats off. And hats off to Sainsbury's, because they're giving them
business.
Yeah.
Gone for it.
Two is getting stuck in. Yeah.
So who inspires you from a sustainability perspective then? Who do you look
Blue,
to?
Blue, the 22-year-old Blue.
Fair.
Yeah, Blue. Blue's been amazing for us. I mean, listen, brands-wise, I mean, we should all be like Patagonia. In that way.
Yeah.
You know, Nudie Jeans. There you go. They're pretty obvious, those two. They're pretty amazing, both of them.
Still worth looking at.
They're far ahead of the rest of us. I mean, I'm trying to get there. Stella's always been sort of harping on about it.
Stella McCartney.
Yeah, she's out there for the planet, definitely. Mm. I'm not a vegetarian, so I can't agree with her on that one, but I can agree with her on lots of other things when it comes to clothing.
Cool.
Yeah.
So continuing this thread then, what's coming next for you in terms of how you're moving both businesses forward, and what kind of challenges are you facing at the moment with Oliver Spencer and Faverbrook?
Yes, I would like Oliver Spencer. I'd like to. I will do one more store in London. It will be totally different to the stores I have.
Okay,
the stores I have are very neighbourhood stores, very much part of a neighbourhood, and very beautiful and very artisan
and quite kind of nicely low key in their own way.
Yeah, they're nicely low key. They're great.
Yeah.
They're really great. So I would probably do a posh shop.
Cool.
For OS, I'll call it a posh shop. So that would be cool. So there's room for one of those in London somewhere. Faverbrook, we're entering into a new period of time. We've just done a licensing agreement with Royal Ascot,
cool.
Which is going to be great. So I'm going to be setting the tone for men's dressing in the Royal Enclosure.
Nice.
This year, which is quite funny, looking at scruffy old me sitting here.
That's really cool.
But that is really cool. And we're launching for the first time. Gentlemen are going to be allowed to wear what I consider to be the most beautiful thing in the world, which is a navy. And when I say navy, talk about dark navy morning suit.
I say. Very controversial.
Yeah, very controversial. Really rocking the establishment, but the board's agreed to it.
I think that's great. I think it would be very easy for me to sit here as a tailoring reactionary and go, how could you possibly do a midnight blue morning coat?
Yeah.
That's not the done thing, but sod it. It's 21st century.
I know, absolutely. And I think that other things could be cleaned up
in
a gentleman's wardrobe when he's turning up to Ascot, and actually having another option is quite a good idea, because I don't want a mistake. Ascot is a good time. It's not a funeral.
Yeah.
And last year when I went on my little recce, my little dress recce for the day.
Your little jolly.
Yeah, I was taking my time to check it all out and see what everyone was wearing.
Yeah.
It did occur to me that a few people turned up looking like they were going to a funeral.
Mm.
And ask us about having fun, right? And it's an amazing event, right up there with Wimbledon, right up there with Henley. Okay, they're all great, great fun. I think we need to step back a little bit and think about this. No other country in the world has three events like that in a row.
Totally.
And we call it the season for a reason. It's pretty rocking. I mean, the best one this summer was at Henley, where I was on the same mission.
Mm.
I have a friend of mine who's a big rower, and he took me down to the Leander Club, and I swanned around like I knew what I was doing.
It's pathetic, but I love a rowing blazer. There's just something about it in the summer.
So the best one is the SBS Special Boat Squadron rowing team. Guess what that blazer looks like?
I've no idea.
Oh, it's full camouflage, boys. I loved it. These boys are rocking around Henley in camouflage blazers.
And all the old boys are quivering.
I just thought that's amazing.
Love it.
So that kind of thing was really good fun. I kind of like all of that old stuff. And not old stuff, it's new stuff. It's brilliant. And it's never, ever been more... I mean, people are really going to these events and having a great time. My friend Will White, who runs Newmarket Races, did a Peaky Blinders Day. Doubled the turnout.
Yeah, guys loved it.
Didn't he double the turnout? Yeah. Amazing. And the Ascot lot were like shaking their heads, wondering how they were going to do that. Ascot's a different thing, but how clever. But everybody dressed up to the nines for it. Flat caps with razors in them and all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully not.
few barmies.
But really good. Really clever. And I think that this is what's going on at the moment. You know, people are really seriously dressing up when they're going out.
But that's the thing, right? It's
for a good time.
That's what interests me about the suit at the moment is for finally it's coming back to being for fun. I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a work thing anymore. And I think the bankers nailed a coffin in the suit. You know, when I look at a banker in a suit, I just think, how much money is he going to take off me?
Yeah.
How many fingers am I going to leave on the table? So,
bankers, if you're listening, we're separates.
But on the other hand, you've got Tricky Dicky Richard Branson, who kind of dressed down for work a long time before everyone else. And you know what the Sex Pistols said about Richard Branson, don't you? Never trust a hippie.
Now, Ollie, thank you so much for that. I really enjoyed that. I want to just end on a closing kind of statement. You've got, you know, your final opportunity on this recording to talk to our listeners, to talk to the consumer. What do you want to say to them?
What do I want to say? Buy smart. You know, I'm not only talking about dress smart, I'm talking about buy smart. Think about what you're buying. Enjoy your retail experience. When you're sat in your armchair, plugging away at the computer, thinking, I want to order that, think, actually, tomorrow lunchtime or Saturday morning, maybe I'll just go and check that thing out in the store and see if I can get some old-fashioned service. Because service is key. It's going to come back massively. Matches have been very smart with bricks and mortar. Lurgs, Carlos Place, it's great. You know, there's a good reason for that. So I think that... think about the high street. Think about how important the high street is. You're not going onto the high street, your community is going to disappear. If we lose the high street completely to armchair pushers, I really see there's going to be a problem in our culture. So I guess it's about, and it goes back to shopkeeping. It all goes back to shopkeeping. It's about that interaction. It's about human interaction, and about standing in front of somebody,
trying something
laughing,
on.
Yeah, laughing, getting annoyed, being impressed, being sold something, having to make the calculation in your mind of whether you can afford it, whether you want it, and then, you know, the considerations of just being in that retail environment and feeling the atmosphere. You know, landlords need to listen. Landlords need to become more creative. I think Shaftesbury have really got it right in Soho as a landlord. They're very, very cool with the way that they deal with their tenants. And Soho, I mean, Soho's in rude health right now.
Yeah.
It really is. It's funny. All went east, has all come back. And that's saying something. Everyone went out east because they thought the rent was cheaper, and then the rent went sky high when all the dot-com lot turned up. And now all the creators have gone back in Soho, where they always wanted to be, at the Grouch. I might leave it at that, actually. What a great way to end. A night at the Grouch.
A night at the Grouch. Yeah. I'll see you there soon. Oliver Spencer, thank you very much indeed for sharing some wisdom this morning. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening.
Well, stylish folk, that's the last episode of Season 3 just about wrapped up. Thank you, as always, for your kind and generous support over the past 10 weeks. As you know, we love making this for you, and the constant stream of positive feedback we receive makes producing Handcut Radio an absolute joy. Now, for the gloomy part. As we sit here in April 2020, we have absolutely no idea what the next few months is going to bring. We were planning to bring you Season 4 in May of this year and to launch our new editorial platform at the same time. Unfortunately, given the current coronavirus situation and the fact we can't travel to interview people or to shoot stories for the editorial, that's just not going to be possible. We want Season 4 to be our strongest yet, and we want to launch an editorial platform that offers you the most compelling menswear experience possible. So, the upshot is we don't yet know when we'll be back. Rest assured that we will be back as soon as all this uncertainty blows over. Handcut is here to stay, and when we do return, I'm going to make sure that we bring you some seriously cool menswear content. To bridge the gap between here and autumn, we are toying with the idea of bringing you some kind of mini-season over the summer, almost certainly with a London menswear focus, because that's where we are in the world, and we want to do our bit to support the craftsmen on our doorstep. We'll keep you posted on this, and hopefully can bring you something that's up to our usual standard relatively soon. In the meantime, keep tuning into our social channels. We're going to keep them ticking over for you, and we'll use social to keep you up to date on forthcoming seasons too. This is also my chance to say thank you to my producer, James Allen at Birch London. Check out the agency's superb creative and design work at birchlondon.com. Our sound editor and theme music composer is Mr. Joe Boyd. Hear more from him by following at This Is Joe Boyd. Now, all of you, please look after yourselves, stay positive, stay active, keep engaging with menswear, and we'll see you again before too long.